Saram, dear listeners, and welcome once again to Vahini Satsang. Today is October 8th, 2020, and we move on with Sandeha Nivarini, just like we have been doing every episode on Vahini Satsang in the last few weeks. And we are in chapter 7 of this beautiful text which Bhagwan has written, which is in the form of question and answer. Bhagwan, as the bhakta, as the devotee, puts the questions, and he again, as the divine, as the master, answers the questions. And we have been, in the last few weeks, going through every sentence of what Bhagwan has written in chapter 7. And in this chapter, for a change, the bhakta does not ask so much a spiritual question, but the bhakta only says to the Lord, "I do not have any doubts. I only want to know how I can become near and dear to you. Only tell me those tenets of life which will make me closer to you." And that is how Bhagwan begins listing out one by one so many beautiful precepts and principles of life. In every episode of Vahini Satsang in the last few weeks, we have been dwelling on each of these principles that Bhagwan has mentioned. Today, we will discuss principle number 45, point number 45, and it comes in the fifth segment. We have divided the seventh chapter of Sandeha Nivarini into five segments just for ease of our understanding and to break the chapter into small dosages for us to contemplate and ruminate upon. So let's listen to what Bhagwan has written in segment 7.5 of Sandeha Nivarini, and then we will, by his grace, try to understand, based on what he has mentioned in so many discourses, what Bhagwan wants us to internalize in point number 45. So here is segment 7.5 of Sandeha Nivarini.
The Lord is understood only by the bhakta. The bhakta is understood only by the Lord. Others cannot understand them. So, do not get into argumentation about divinity with those who do not have devotion. Such discussions will only weaken your devotion. 43. If anyone speaks to you with wrong understanding of any subject, do not think of other wrong notions which will support that stand. However, grasp the good and pleasant feelings in them, which is its true meaning. Do not get into wrong and varied meanings, which will lead to meaninglessness and ruin your ananda. 44. Cultivate one-pointedness. Do not scatter your vision to the four corners and on everything, be it a market or a crowd, but see only the road in front of you and move forward. Ensure that you take care of your body and avoid accidents. One-pointedness will become stronger if one moves about without taking one's attention off the road, avoiding dangers and having your vision not distracted with other objects. 45. Give up all doubts regarding the Guru and God. If your worldly desires do not get fulfilled, do not blame it on your devotion. There is no relationship between such desires and devotion to God. These worldly desires have to be given up some day or the other. Bhakti has to be necessarily acquired. develop this strong conviction. 46. If you are unable to fix your mind on the sadhana of dhyana or japa, or if the desires you have entertained do not come to fruition, do not get frustrated with God. It will dispirit you even more, and you will lose the peace, however small or big, that you might have earned. When you do dhyana and japa, you should not be filled with feelings of frustration, dispiritedness and dejection. When such feelings come, take it that it is the fault of your own sadhana and endeavor to do them correctly. It is only when in your daily conduct and in all actions you automatically behave and act in this manner and along these lines that you can attain the divine principle very easily. Therefore, hold on to these maxims firmly. Chew and relish these spoken sweets distributed on the birthday festival of your Swami and be happy. Have you understood?
Your words are like nectar, Swami. In all these ordinary dealings of life, man does not know the road. He follows the wrong track and does not read the books which tell him the means of a happy journey. For all such people who are struggling like me, what you have said are pertinent points to reflect. We are indeed blessed. Bless me that these words get imprinted on my heart and are realized in practice every day. There is no good in simply listening or reading them. It is only when your grace accompanies them that we get strength. I shall take leave, Swami.
All right, go and come for the birthday festival. There are just 7 days more, isn't it? Today is the 16th. The birthday is on November 23rd. So there are 7 days left. Till that time, let this sweetness fill and overflow your heart.
So those were Bhagwan's words from the last segment of chapter 7 of Sandhya Nivarini. And as I mentioned before, today we will discuss point number 45, where Bhagwan is saying, give up all doubts regarding the Guru and God. If your worldly desires do not get fulfilled, do not blame it on your devotion. There is no relationship between such desires and devotion to God. These worldly desires have to be given up someday or the other. Bhakti has to be necessarily acquired. Develop this strong conviction. Many times it does happen that when what we would have prayed for, what we would have wished, what we would have aspired for, does not materialize, then we question our devotion, we question our love, we question our worship, we question our steadfastness. I have been doing Nagar Sankirtan for the last 20 years and how come my son did not get admission in Swami's college? I have been a regular Sevadal member going to Prashant Nilayam. I never missed any year going to Puttaparthi for Seva. How come my wife is not well today? I have been singing bhajans in this samiti for the last 25 years. How is it that I am not invited for this conference? How is it that I got this misfortune in my life? I have worshipped in him so much. I have spent so much time doing his work. Sometimes we go into these thought processes because of the vicissitudes of life. And Swami here is telling, there is no relationship between the fulfillment of your desires and your devotion to God. We often come to God because we want some desires to be fulfilled. God is a person who will ensure that what I want happens. And in fact, that is how, unfortunately, God also is so much portrayed in various faiths. You go to so many temples and it will be said that, you know, if you pray here, all your wishes will be fulfilled. If you donate here, then all your desires will come to fruition. If you go there, then this kind of desire will find fulfillment. If you go to this shrine, then this kind of wish will materialize. I mean, that is how, unfortunately, we have always conditioned ourselves, and so many people think of the divine as someone who is there to fulfill whatever our mind wants. And here Bhagwan is so categorically stating that there is absolutely no connection between your desires and your love for God. They are separate. Love for God is something that you have to acquire. There is no two thoughts about it. Swami says it has to be necessarily acquired. And desires are something which have to be given up. Again, there is no two thoughts about it. You have some desires, but ultimately you have to go to a stage where we have to reduce and reduce and reduce your desires. So clear, Bhagwan is clarifying the concept of devotion, the concept of love for God, the concept of our connect with the Lord here. Swami says, develop this strong conviction that the worldly desires have to be given up. Bhakti has to be necessarily acquired, and there is no relationship between the both. In fact, in a very beautiful discourse which Bhagwan delivered in the Prashantinilam Mandir on 15 September 1988, Bhagwan says, Bhakti means paripurna prema, total love. And this love is motiveless. This love is based on seeking nothing. If the love is based on a motive, then it cannot be real love. Swami says, as a river joins the ocean by natural impulse, as a creeper winds itself naturally around a tree so that it can climb upwards, as so naturally a stream wants to become one with the sea, that is how naturally the love of a devotee should be. It should be as spontaneous expression of yearning to become one with the source. We should have no other worldly desires. If we have this kind of love, I love God because I want Him to take care of my family. I love God because I want Him to look after this aspect of my life. If I want God because I want the bliss of serving Him. I want God because I want to be an instrument in His hands. All this might be good desires, but Swami is saying, if I love God because comes, if the word because comes after I love God, then that is not paripurna prema, that is not total love. It should be, I love God, period. That's it. Swami says that was the kind of love that Gopikas had. The only quest was to become one with the divine. Swami says they saw Krishna in every manifestation in nature and welcomed association with it, whether it was a tree, whether it was a mountain, whether it was an ocean. They wished to be always near Krishna. They wanted to sport with him. They wanted to listen to the music of his flute. They wanted to end their lives with Krishna. The only thing was Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. To become one with Krishna. That's it. Swami says, apart from the gopis, even Dharmaja, the eldest of the Pandavas, was also an exemplar of Parama Bhakti, supreme devotion. Whatever ordeals they were subjected to, whatever humiliations they had to experience, Dharmaja, Swami says, Yudhishthira never allowed his faith in Krishna to weaken. Whether they were in the city, whether they were in the forest, whether they were in the best of times, whether they were in the worst of times, Swami says, Dharmaja used to always say, O Krishna, whether in happiness or sorrow, whether in high or low, you are my sole refuge. And Swami says it is because of this unflinching and single-minded faith in Krishna that Dharmaja could achieve glory and he stood out as an ideal to the world. The path of bhakti, Swami says, is easier than jnana, the path of knowledge. But this love should come from within. It should not be an attitude of petitioning to God for favors. Love is not a business. It is not as if, okay, I am doing this for you, Swami. See, I have done so much seva for you, Swami. You look after my family. You look after my company. See, I have donated so much, or I have spent so much of my energy, time doing this good work. Now you look after me. It is not an exchange. Love for love's sake. That is what is true devotion. That is what is the conviction that each one of us should develop, Swami says. Swami says, if you earn this kind of love for God, even to a slightest extent, if you earn this kind of love, you will experience infinite joy, Swami says. In fact, I am reminded of the life of Professor Kasturi. The marriage of Professor Kasturi happened when he was very young, when he was just 14, 15. In those days, child marriages were common in India. And even after 10 years of married life, they did not have a child. And so the couple prayed to the family deity, Lord Venkateshwara of Tirupati, and they took a vow that if a child was born to them, then they would offer the Lord a small silver cradle and a golden image of baby. This is how it happens with so many of us, isn't it? We say, God, okay, I'm doing this, I'll do this for you if this happens. And this is what Swami says is not the sign of real love. But all of us, we have so many wishes, we have so many wants, and this is how our journey to God begins. So that is what Professor Kasturi and his wife prayed for. They told Lord Venkateshwara of Tirupati that we will offer a small silver cradle and a golden image of a baby. And so they kept these two items in the shrine and they continued to do puja. One day, to their amazement, they saw that both this silver cradle and the baby, they were missing from the shrine. So they thought that, okay, maybe God is not happy. They are not going to be blessed with children because they offered this, they are doing worship and the whole thing has disappeared actually. They were so disappointed, they searched every nook and corner of the house, but they could not find They were very, very sad. Then came the festival of Ganesh Chaturthi. And on that day, Professor Kasturi prayed to Lord Ganesha. See, if you are really satisfied with our puja, at least give back those idols, give back that silver and the gold and that figure of the baby. Why did you even take that away? And it seems that wonder of wonders happened the next morning. The golden child, which was earlier there in the shrine, suddenly was found. And it was on the rangoli, on the colorful decorations which were made on the floor. And when that golden child appeared, soon after, wife of Professor Kasturi conceived. And when that happened, the couple was so happy. They took a vow now, another vow. And they said, "Oh Lord, we promise you to offer all the jewels that we put on the child to you as ornaments. All the jewels that we put on our baby, we will give it to you." And so that is how, when the first son was born, who was named as Murthy, when he was 3 years old, Professor Kasturi went with his wife to Tirupati and they offered all the jewels to the Lord as the promise that they had made. The naming ceremony of the baby and the sacred thread ceremony, everything was performed in Tirupati. In fact, later on in life, when Mr. Murthy got married, his marriage was performed at Mysore, and both he and his wife, they climbed up the Tirumala hills by foot to offer their prayers. So from then on, Lord Venkateshwara and Lord Ganesha became Mrs. Kasturi's favorite deities because they had responded to their prayer. You had a desire and the God fulfilled this desire. And so now you say, yes, yes, he is my God. He is truly the one worthy of worship. And that is how it continued for many years until one day later on, Professor Kasturi had a daughter and a son. Many years later, tragically, Professor Kasturi suddenly lost his younger son. He was in his teens, very promising, smart boy. But when Professor Kasturi suddenly lost this boy out of a tragic illness, those days medical facilities also were very poor. Now, Mrs. Kasturi was so shattered, she forgot all her devotion to Venkateshwara and Lord Ganesha, and she felt, all these gods have turned against me. How can they take away my son, my young son? And that's it. She became an atheist. Someone who had loved God and believed in God and prayed to God, experienced the mercy of the Lord for so many years, with that one incident, she completely turned against God. And after that, as the story goes, they came to Bhagwan. And once Swami asked Mrs. Kasturi, "Tell me, who is your family deity?" And because of that anger that Mrs. Kasturi had on Lord Venkateshwara, she did not even want to utter the name of Lord Venkateshwara, even though it was the family deity. She only said, "Swami, earlier I was like Prahlada. I used to always remember the Lord with love. But now I have become like Hiranyakashipu. I utter the same name but I have no love. It is only hatred." And this is what she was feeling for Lord Venkateshwara. This is what Swami is saying, isn't it? When your wishes get fulfilled, then you think your devotion is fine. When your wishes don't get fulfilled, then you feel, no, what is the point of my devotion? And this is what the journey that she went through. And when she told that to Bhagwan, Swami felt very sorry for her, and Swami said, "Papam, papam." The Lord, when Lord understands, and the Lord is saying, I mean, it is so sad that we are measuring everything through the fulfillment of our desires. Desires relate to the world, and God is beyond desires. The grace is beyond desires. So that continued, but the mercy of the Lord is so much. Swami says, even if you try to run away from me, I will not allow you to go. That is the loving resolve of Bhagavan. And then came the story of how everything turned around. There was this Mr. Balchandran, a distant relative, who used to come to Professor Kasturi's house to take tuition in history. And he was preparing to appear for the IAS examination. And Professor Kasturi liked this boy so much. He was of mild temperament, very soft-spoken nature, and his behavior also appealed to Professor Kasturi and his wife. And this boy was the only son of his parents, and he was already working in a central government office. The family was not very orthodox. And Professor Kasturi used to think how nice it would be if his daughter, Padma, was given in marriage to this boy. Professor Kasturi would think that would be such a beautiful thing to happen for his daughter. And it was during this time that they shifted to a new house from the rented house. And even there, Mr. Balchandran used to come for tuition. And Balchandran's parents and grandparents, they were all devotees of Swami. In those days, in 40s itself, and they had already visited Puttaparthi during so many festivals. And when he used to come for tuitions, Balchandran used to always talk about Bhagwan and Swami's miracles and Swami's powers. And all these made Professor Kasturi very curious about Swami. And Professor Kasturi thought that this boy is such a smart young man, and if he's so impressed by Swami, then definitely Swami must be something really extraordinary. And that was also one trigger for Professor Kasturi to explore Swami. And it was in June 1948, when they were residing in Bangalore, that Professor Kasturi came to know of Bhagwan. Swami had come to the house of a devotee on the Bull Temple Road in Basavangudi in Bengaluru. And Professor Kasturi decided to go and have Bhagwan's darshan along with his daughter and his wife. And he saw that the hall was filled with people, but the atmosphere was so serene, it was so divine. They were singing bhajans. On one side of the hall there was a table, and there were some pictures placed there. Swami was sitting on the ground with all the devotees. And as all the devotees were singing bhajans, Swami also was singing bhajans. We are talking about 1948. After some time, bhajans concluded and Bhagwan stood up. And Swami himself did aarti. I mean, that is the love of Bhagwan. In those days, he sang bhajans and showed us how to sing bhajans. He did the aarti and showed us how we should do aarti. He did the seva and showed us how to do Narayan seva. Every little thing that Bhagwan asked us to do in the later years, everything he has done himself. And that is the reason why Swami used to always say, my life is my message. So Bhagwan did the aarti. And as Bhagwan was approaching Professor Kasturi, Swami told him to go to the next room. And that was the personal interview session. And when Swami called Professor Kasturi, he started speaking to him, and Swami told everything about his life, about the death of his son, which had put that family into so much misery and pain, how they had lost faith in God because of that misfortune that had happened. Swami told about the problem that Professor Kasturi was having in his career. Swami told about the eczema that he was having on his foot. Swami told about the ill health of the grandmother of Professor Kasturi's mother, who was left behind at home. Everything, Swami, it is almost like an open book. And Swami finally gave vibhuti packets and flowers and fruits and prasadam. And Professor Kasturi came out of the entry room full, wonderstruck and suffused with his love. And he thought, oh my God, who is this? This Swami is beyond explanation. He is a phenomenon beyond this world. And so the next day, he went again for Bhagwan's darshan with his mother. And even though Bhagwan was getting ready to go somewhere during that time, Swami, it appeared as if Swami was waiting for Professor Kasturi to come, and he gave him Padnamskaram and Prasadam. And slowly that changed Mrs. Kasturi a little. Till now she was so against God, and she'd always feel that God has done this tragedy in my life. It is God who has brought upon this misery in my life. But slowly after experiencing Bhagwan's love, there was slight transformation. And the next year, again they had darshan of Bhagwan in Bangalore, 1949. It was in Dr. Padmanabhan's house where they had organized a Pada Puja. And in the same year, Professor Kasturi had darshan of Bhagwan once again during the Akhanda Bhajan function. In those days, there were these 6-7 families in Bangalore who used to do Akhanda Bhajan. In fact, the Akhanda Bhajan tradition started with these families, from the Dr. Padmanabhan's family. And every Thursday, they used to have bhajans in various homes there. And this culminated in the Akhanda Bhajan once a year. And Professor Kasturi started going more for Bhagwan's darshan during this period, 1949. And it was this time again when this Balchandran's grandfather gave a small picture of Swami to Professor Kasturi. In those days, it was very rare to even get a picture of Bhagwan. And so Professor Kasturi took that picture and he kept it on a wall next to the shrine. And now Swami had brought both the families together, Balchandran's family and Professor Kasturi's family together, because they were now talking so much about Bhagwan, and they enjoyed talking about his leelas. And Mrs. Kasturi found a new peace, and she found some solace in these sessions about Bhagwan. And that transformation slowly had started. And by this time, Professor Kasturi's daughter was 16 years and she was studying at the Mount Carmel College in Bengaluru. And in those days, since marriages happen very early in a girl's life, so Professor Kasturi had already started thinking about Padma Kasturi's marriage, as I mentioned. And the only thing was, Professor Kasturi did not have a lot of money then. They had built a new house, so they were in debt. And so Professor Kasturi was thinking that this Chandran is a very nice boy. I don't know if anyone else probably will ask a lot of money, maybe ask a dowry, and these people are devotees of Bhagwan. They are such nice people. So this was always on the top of his mind. And so one day, Professor Kasturi goes and approaches Balchandran's family with the proposal for the alliance. And but Balchandran's father says that, no, Chandran is very young, it is too early, we are not thinking about his marriage, and maybe you should look for some other alliance. We will find you some other boy, and these kind of things. And when that happened, Professor Kasturi was very disappointed. He got a feeling that somehow they are not comfortable in giving their son in marriage with his daughter. And that was very, very disappointing for Professor Kasturi. And Mrs. Kasturi thought, these people, they have so much faith in Baba. If only Baba tells them something, If only he suggests this alliance to them, I'm sure they will agree, they will not give any more such reasons. And this is what she mentally prayed. And she left it at that. And now Balachandran's grandfather found some other match. Now the families had become close and they said, okay, we will help. They found some other boy. And the date was fixed for the meeting of these two families now. And the previous day was a Thursday and Padma Kasturi had gone, was leaving for college, and suddenly Mrs. Kasturi calls her and says that, you know, you have to take leave from college tomorrow because there is someone who is coming to see you and we are working on your marriage. And Professor Kasturi went to Chandran's house on that evening to meet Chandran's grandfather, who was to bring the other family the next day to Professor Kasturi's place. And all this planning was going on, and suddenly on the Thursday morning, early in the morning, Chandran's father, Parameshwar Iyer, has a dream, and Swami appears in the dream, and Swami says, I want to meet you urgently. It's about your son's marriage. Come and meet. I have fixed your son's marriage. And Bhagwan was in Bangalore at that time. So when he gets this early morning dream, Parameshwar Iyer hurriedly gets up and he applies leave from work and he goes to see Bhagwan. He was working in the purchase department of Hindustan Aeronautics Limited then. And immediately he goes to Whitefield to see Swami. And the moment Swami sees him, Swami calls him inside and Swami says, that girl's father is a professor. They have been asking for this alliance. Why have you been refusing? Their house is in near Lal Bagh. Get your son married to this girl. This will be good for both the families. And Parameshwar Iyer, when he heard these words from Bhagwan, he was so taken aback. He rushed back to home and he called up Professor Kasturi and he broke the news and he was very repentant. He sought forgiveness and he said, this is what Swami's command is. And imagine the joy of Professor Kasturi and Mrs. Kasturi. Mrs. Kasturi was in the ninth heaven because she had silently prayed to Swami that if only Swami intervened, then this marriage could happen. And the way Bhagwan has intervened, she was now certain that Bhagwan is God. So now Swami's picture found a place in the shrine of Professor Kasturi's altar, and Mrs. Kasturi now every day started doing Mangalarti and pujas to Bhagwan. Every day so grateful to Swami for making this happen, finding the right match for her daughter. When you think about it, Swami says, this is what is not true devotion. Earlier, because God answered your prayers, you started worshipping. And when some mishap happened, then you said, no, I don't believe in God. I don't want to worship. I don't even want to utter the name. And then again, when what you want happens, then you say, oh, this is the God that I want. I will do Him aarti every day. I will worship every day. I mean, this is the journey of devotees, in the initial journey of Professor and Mrs. Kasturi. But you know, when you, I feel so many of us have gone through this journey. So many people who begin their love for the Lord go through these periods when so many, when your health deteriorates so much, then you feel, why Swami, this is happening to me? What wrong have I done? What mistake have I done? Why am I going through so much? And you feel there's no point praying. Why should I pray? How much of our prayer does not make any sense? You know, he does not listen to me. All those thoughts come. And so that is where Swami wants us, that is not what is devotion. In fact, you know, as the story goes of Professor Kasturi, Swami conducted the marriage, and Swami, the marriage happened at Puttaparthi, and Swami fixed the date, and Swami told Professor Kasturi, you just come a week before. I will do all the arrangements. You don't have to bring a big group. Small group is enough. You have your big reception in Bangalore, and Swami takes charge of the entire marriage, and Swami says that the marriage will happen in the Kalyan Mandapam, in the Path Mandir, in the old Mandir, and in fact it happened in the same year in 1950 when Prashant Nilayam was inaugurated. In fact, the Dasara celebrations in 1950 were coupled with the birthday celebrations because everybody was busy with the construction of the Mandir, and Swami decided that the marriage should happen on the Vijayadashmi day, on the 10th day of Dasara, in his immediate presence. I mean, that is how gloriously the marriage of Padma Kasturi happened, orchestrated completely by Swami in every way. And of course, later on, we know how Professor Kasturi came and he settled down at Puttaparthi after retirement, and he wrote Swami's biography, Satyam Shivam Sundaram. And so when all those favorable things happened for Mrs. Kasturi, then her love for Bhagwan again bloomed and Swami became the center of her life. But actually the story does not end there. If you see the life of Padma Kasturi, after that she actually went through a lot of hardships. In fact, she had 3 sons from that marriage, but the marriage was a very difficult one. After some time, her husband was no more there with her. He suddenly disappeared, and she was left alone to take care of 3 children. And she went through so many trying circumstances. In fact, there's a very beautiful book, Tomeva Mata by Padmamma. And it moves you when you read about the struggles and the showers of grace she experienced during that period in her life. In fact, there was a time when she thought if she should start working, and Swami said, I will take care of you. Do not worry. Even if the worst happens and there is nobody to take care of you, I am here to take care of you. And Swami placed his palm, his right palm, over her right palm and said, and gave that promise, I will take care of you. And that is how she has led her life. One day she asked Swami, Swami, it was a time when she was going through so much pain. She said, Swami, you yourself arranged my marriage. You performed it in your divine presence. Why is it that my marriage did not come out as a beautiful one? Why is it a failure? And Swami said, it is all decided when you are born. I am only an instrument to see that it happens. I am only a witness. What we have to go through, we have to go through. Let us not connect that with our love for God. Just because some mishap happened, we cannot jettison the most precious thing that we have cultivated in our life, and that is to love Him. Because if that also we lose, then there is nothing in our life. And then Bhagwan went on to explain, see Padma, all these worldly relationships, husband, children, father, mother, brother, sister, they are all governed by nirbandha. Nirbandha means compulsion. It's a bondage. Compulsive bondage. Swami said, Swami is the one and only real sambandha, the only real relationship, the only real relative that you can have. Have firm faith in Him. Swami said, if anything happens with our nirbandha, that should not affect our sambandha. Anything that happens in our worldly relationships, that is all governed by bondage, and that should not affect the only true relationship that we have in our life. That's what Bhagwan is telling in this point. There's no relationship between your desires and your devotion to God. But she said, Swami, by your divine will, you can change my husband. Why are you not doing so? Swami said, I never give anesthesia and perform the operation. It is important that you feel the pain, because only then you will feel sorry for your behavior and you will not repeat it. If a lamp is burning and a child wants to go and touch it, we can go and warn the child. But if he persists, then we will tell, okay, go and touch it. Once you burn your finger, after that you'll learn. Once the child experiences that, he will never touch the fire again throughout his life. Swami said, in the same way, I warn. But if you don't listen, if you don't listen to me, then you have to learn the hard way. What can I do? It is your karma. But Swami said, if your karma is to walk on a thorny road, what I will do, if your focus is on me, I will give you shoes to wear. I cannot remove all the thorns, but I will give you shoes to wear. It will not affect you. The thorns will not prick your feet. If your karma is to walk in the hot sun, I will give you an umbrella. But it is your job to open the umbrella and hold it. But Swami says, but if you surrender to me completely, I will myself open the umbrella and I will hold it for you, so that even if you have to walk in the hot sun, it will not affect you. I will take care. But for that, you have to keep that sambandha with me. You have to keep that connection. Just because you're walking the hot sun, will tell, what is the point? I have been doing so much work for Swami. I have done so much for the organization. Why am I being asked to walk in the hot sun? If you do that, then you will miss the chance of God coming and opening the umbrella and holding it for you. Let us not do anything which will affect that sambandha that we have with the Lord. Anything that happens with everybody else is nirbandha, and that is something that should in no way affect our connection to God. And that's what Swami was saying. Your husband was a person who did not listen to me. What can I do? In 2005, Swami gave interview to Miss Suma, Dr. Suma, who is a teacher in the Anandpur campus, to her and her family. And Madam Suma always had this desire, whenever she used to see that Swami is with the boys, she used to feel that, why Swami does not say that he is happy with the girls also? Why Swami spends so much time with the boys? She used to have these questions studying in the Anandpur campus, and later on she became a teacher. And in that interview, suddenly Swami looked at her when this thought was going on in her mind, and Swami said, these girls are my children. They have given their life to me, Swami said. And then Swami started listing out qualifications of Dr. Suma, and he reeled off some 6-7 degrees that she had never heard of. She has never done that. Just like a proud mother talks about the child, Swami started talking about her. And Swami said, see, she has finished all these degrees, but she did not go out. She is just here serving Bhagwan. And then Swami looked at Dr. Suma, and Swami said, ask what you want. Anything that you want, you ask. I'm here to give you. I mean, God is telling you, ask whatever you want. And Dr. Suma was unable to think what to ask. Mind was racing. Unable to put together. You don't get this chance where God comes and tells you, ask whatever you want. And you don't want to miss the opportunity. And you see, say, Swami, can you please give me bhakti? Can you please give me devotion? And when she asked that, Swami didn't look very happy. Swami said, why do you want bhakti? Why do you want devotion? And she said, Swami, all of life, we have this choice to make, choice between you and other things. And at every time, Swami, I have chosen you. Now that I have made this choice, Swami, I need a certain degree of focus on you. I want that devotion to you. So give me that bhakti, give me that devotion, so that I make these right choices all through. Every time this choice comes, if I have devotion, then I'll go the, make the right choice and walk on the right path. Bhagavan looked at her and Swami said, no, no, this is not the right thing for you to ask. Correct, you need bhakti to make choices, but you have already made your choice in life. So you don't have to ask for bhakti. You have already made your choice. Then she said, then Swami, what should I ask for, Swami? Swami said, ask for obedience. Ask for obedience. And that's what she finally prayed, Swami, please give me obedience. Because many a times we understand Bhagavan's message, we think we have made the right choice, but we are not able to abide by everything that Bhagavan has told to walk on that path. Delivering on that choice is important, and to deliver on that choice, we need absolute implicit obedience to His word. And that is what Bhagavan wants. If we have this kind of obedience to Bhagavan, then our love will be always Parama Prema. We will accept everything that comes from Bhagavan. We will have no expectations. We will have no questions. We will have no reservations. We only follow. We have love in our heart and we follow. In a beautiful letter that Bhagavan wrote way back in 1974, Swami says, what is peace? And in that letter where Bhagavan is defining peace, Swami says, the proof of the rain is the wetness of the ground. The proof of true devotion is in the peace of mind that the aspirants are able to attain, the peace which protects him against the onslaughts of failures, the peace which he is unruffled, which makes him unruffled by loss and dishonor, a peace that does not perturb his mind with anger, hatred, jealousy, conceit and lower passions, a peace that makes him feel tranquil, unconnected and unattached under all circumstances and with all human natures. The proof of the rain is the wetness of the ground. The proof of our devotion is in the peace of mind. And this peace happens when we have that obedience to the Lord. And that obedience happens when you have that unflinching love, love which has no questions, love which does not seek anything, love which knows only to give itself in love. Whether something is fulfilled or not, whether a desire has found fulfillment or not, it has got nothing to do with my love for my God. I pray If I need anything, why do I ask? Why should I ask anyone else? I will ask God. But if He gives it, very nice. If He does not, it is even better because He knows what is best. If He does not fulfill it, it is not as if He does not love me anymore. I thought I will get cured in 10 days, but I'm suffering. It has been 1 month. He does not like me anymore. This is not what is love. As Bhagwan says, Paripurna Prema is motiveless. It's as natural a thing as a rivulet wanting to merge in the sea. Let us pray to Swami that we cultivate such kind of love and let nothing happen in our lives which even in a slightest manner affects this relationship, because this is the only true relationship worthy of having for us. This is the true Sambandha, as Swami told Padma Kasturi. Madam, let's pray for this relationship. Let's embolden this relationship. And if, Swami says, you cultivate even a tiny trace of this love, you will be filled with infinite joy. Let us fill our lives with bliss, having cultivated this undisturbed, unsullied, ceaseless love for God. So this is what Bhagwan has mentioned in point number 45 of Sandeha Nivarini, chapter 7. There are a few more things that Bhagwan has mentioned and which we will take up in the coming episodes of Vaini Satsang. As always, dear listeners, please feel free to share your thoughts. And it is a journey, we are doing it together. If you are reading Sandeha Nivarini, and if there are any insights, if there are any learnings that you come across, please feel free to share with us. You can write to listener@radiosai.org. If you want to write anything personally to me, you can write to bishu@radiosai.org. You can also WhatsApp us on our WhatsApp number 9393-258-258. Offering my gratitude to Bhagwan for this beautiful opportunity to dwell on His powerful divine messages, and praying that we internalize these messages and experience that joy that He wants us to live in at every point of time. Thank you so much. Sai Ram.